welcome everybody to our third Philosophical Society International event. It's great to see so many of you here today. Thank you so much for coming along, because without you, we couldn't have a conference. And I'd also like to say a very big thank you to our four speakers today. We're going to be tackling that concept that is in some ways so familiar to us all. I mean, we're all familiar with the passage of time. And yet, when we try and analyse it, it turns out to be something rather elusive. You know, I can remember when I was a child, how it seemed to be forever from one birthday to another. And now, sort of, it seems to get faster and faster between the time between two birthdays, that I think I blink and then, oh my goodness, there's another birthday. So our four speakers today are going to be trying to get us to understand that concept of time. I'd also like to say a huge thank you to Alan and Silky, because organising this event. We've got this wonderful hotel here, great conference facilities, and the fantastic tour that I know many of you came on last night, which really was excellent. So thank you so much. Fantastic. So each of our speakers is going to be talking for about 30 minutes, and then there'll be 15 minutes of question time. And then at the end of all the speakers, there's going to be a panel discussion time, so plenty of time for you to put forward your questions and for us to have a discussion. So I hope you're all going to have a wonderful day. Just one other thing to say is that the meeting is going to be recorded, so hopefully nobody's got any objection to that. If you do, then please let us know. We'll delete your voice out if it comes up, because the plan will be to then load that up onto the Philosophical Society website, so that those who haven't had the fortune of coming to our International Day be able to find out what we've been discussing. So I'm now going to hand you over to our first speaker, Alan.
Thank you, Marcia. It's a pleasure to be here, to have you here. I hope I'm not normally shouting. can you hear me? So basically, my talk is about reflections on the nature and direction of time. I have to make one small caveat before I start. During this talk, I will raise more questions than I can actually answer. Okay, so supplement. And I will also oversimplify sometimes. Okay, so don't be shocked, those who have knowledge of physics, for example, that can require philosophy. Okay, so this is the, hopefully this will be the structure. So the first 10 minutes I'll try to reflect on the physical reality, what I call reality, what we can see, what we can observe. Second 12 minutes, hopefully, reflections on time as a concept, as part of this reality. The last 8 minutes, concluding reflections. So, four questions I'll try to tackle will be whether time was born with this universe, whether it is embedded in the fabric of reality, whether time is embedded in the fabric of reality, or whether it is emergent from some more fundamental stuff. And the most important question, the direction of time, the arrow of time. I decided to start with what the universe is made of, so to say, and how it was born, because it's important to understand space in order to understand time, because as we know, space and time are the fabric of reality, as far as we know. Right. So, I like 3D, so I made a small model here. You can see it later, perhaps, of how it all started. I think everyone is familiar with the concept of Big Bang. So 13.7 billion years ago, we had an enormous explosion, well, that's what we think, and this produced the universe we know today. And one is legitimately safe, it is legitimately safe to say that time was born with everything else. One can presume that, that time was born with everything else in that explosion. Let us say that this is the singularity, the Big Bang, that gave rise to the whole universe, to the cone, to the rise, right? We see, but in our universe, that the distribution of matter, of all the stuff there is in the universe, and also the temperature of the universe is approximately the same everywhere. This is quite odd, because one would assume that the further away from the explosion, the cooler it would get, or the quicker cool it would get. But this did not happen in the universe. It's very, very, very uniform, as you can see here, except for this patch here. And some physicists advance the idea of having a bubble universe touching to our universe, and that's why it's cooler. But this maybe we'll tackle later. This is for the background microwave radiation. What we see in the observable universe is all the observable universe. What we can see. And you will realize now that it's relevant for time, because it can't be that everything is so uniform, as I said, and when the speed limit within the universe is the speed of light, it's impossible. But what happened, probably, now I'll try to show it graphically, is that it expanded, so the whole universe expanded from a tiny quantum speck into what we see nowadays in a very short period of time. So with a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a second. And this is called inflation, Inflation. So everything else was, sorry about that, was basically expanded very, very, very quickly. And from inflation to the universe that we see today took basically very, very short. But what is interesting for me is that this inflation is still going on. So our universe is still expanding faster than the speed of light, probably. And then we'll talk about in what it is expanding, because that is also another issue. So our universe would well have started from a singularity, from a Big Bang, then singularity. However, there could have been also a big crunch pre-Big Bang, what we saw before and see here, the other cone. Okay? Where the previous universe then collapsed back into a singularity, so into the Big Bang itself. And that is called the Big Bounce. So the cycle of birth and death and then rebirth carrying on like this. This is, of course, just one of the theories, and then I'll say later, I'll tell you why this appears not to be feasible, unfortunately. So the most recent update to the Big Bang theory is that of the what we call the string theory landscape. string theory assumes that subatomic particles are not the smallest things that we have composing matter and energy, but strings are tiny one-dimensional vibrating strings. And in accordance to how they vibrate, they would create either electromagnetic energy, a particle, whatever we see, or whatever we feel. Now, string landscape, string theory landscape, tries to join the inflation theory with its own, with itself, and as a consequence of this union between these two theories, the concept of multiverse came about. That we have not just one universe, we have our own universe, but we have also, I always try to represent something, baby universes or no other universes, which basically have their own existence, their own laws of physics. Maybe different, maybe similar. Okay. Of course, we can't prove it, although that blue patch that we saw could be an indication of another universe touching our, so to say. You imagine them as bubbles, as spheres. So, as we already said, and this, it is estimated that it's 10 to the 500 versions of universes. So, it is quite a number. Yeah, but earlier on I said, so what would all this be happening? I mean, if there are so many universes, and I got the idea of representation of what we call the bulk, so hyperspace, through my son's toys, actually. We are probably, so our universe, the whole universe, before I go through that, is probably attached to a membrane as a consequence of string theory. To a membrane, to a slice of reality, if you want, and stuck to it. This is our universe, stuck to it, and that's why we see everything in 3D. That's the flat stuff, I know. And according to this theory, but there are other slices of reality, there's a little bit of breath there, which would look something, not like that, something like this. So, and each slice, each and every slice would have different universe, or more perhaps, attached to it, with different rules to it. Why is this relevant? Because in hyperspace, time does not pass, or doesn't pass at the same rate. So this is very, very, very interesting. And there are some experiments which have been done, and the result of these experiments is pointing towards this reality. For example, that some particles appear to disappear and reappear, for example, from nothing, nothingness. There are some who think that they don't really disappear, but they go out in hyperspace and come in back before they actually left. So time there could be a bit tricky in there. That is basically the bulk then, hyperspace. Okay, now we start. It's good that I didn't take the whole time, probably, I don't know, but I did actually, for the first part. So Doctor Who, you're all familiar with Doctor Who, I got my own TARDIS here. Okay, and I love Doctor Who. And of course, he supports that time is not linear, but it's a wobbly, wibbly, whatever he says, you know. So might be he might be more right than he thought. and here we go a bit to a shock, actually, because when my wife asked me, for example, about why is time important for philosophy. Why is it important for philosophy? And I honestly couldn't give her a proper answer. So I know why it's important for me, but I don't know why is it important, or would it be really important for me. But I think it's because it's a mystery for both science and philosophy. We don't really know what time is. Is it a particle? Is it a field? Is it a quantum fluctuation of some kind? Is it, I don't know. What else can I add? Is it like a photon then? We don't know what it is. But some scientists say that time actually does not exist. And this creates a bit of a problem because we all experience time somehow. But many of the theories that we have can have a reversal of time. So relativity, time is works two-way with the equations. So it becomes a little bit irrelevant, so to say, or very relevant. One thing nowadays that all physicists agree upon is that, thanks to him, one of my heroes, is that time is not absolute. So, till Einstein, so according to Newton, to Sir Isaac Newton, time was ticking everywhere in the universe at the same rate. Nothing could change the ticking of time. It was ticking on Earth the same as Mars, in our galaxy, the same as in Andromeda, so ticking all at the same time. And then Einstein came along and he said, this is not quite true, because time is relative to speed, to velocity, and to gravity. Gravity slows time, and speed slows time. So the faster you move, the slower time passes, actually. And this is proven, you say, the theory of relativity, but it's not theory at all. It's a reality proven scientifically over and over again. Okay, the first time he was going to try to prove it, I won't go into the details, the First World War broke out, if I remember the first one, yeah. And so they couldn't, thank God, because his calculations were wrong. And then he realized, and then the second time they tried it, he put in the new calculations, and he got it right. Okay. But this is the most important thing, that time is not absolute. One can understand how gravity affects the whole of reality, because if we are saying, my initial statement, that space and time are one big fabric, imagine a piece of material, right? And that gravity affects space, but it affects time, because it warps it. The effect would be, more or less, the other way up, the effect would be that what we perceive as gravity, as a pull, it's not a pull at all. It's distortion by mass of this fabric. And so, the best way I could think of to present it is like this. So, so what mass does to space-time, so to space and time together, is to warp, to distort it. And what we perceive as planets going round, they would be really going round the distortion that is created by mass and gravity. And this affects time as well. So time, in reality, you have to check, is ticking faster here for me than there, because I'm closer to the source of gravity, to mass. Huh?
it's in reality, for example, people who go very fast, like in a rocket, for example, they travel into the future. They don't just travel in space, they travel in time. Because it's not a metaphor, mind you, it's not perception of the brain. It's really slowed down. So for them, nothing is different. So they would live 100 years if they had to live 100 years themselves. But all around them would be going faster. Because they are going faster than the normal person. So the faster you travel, the more time slows down. And if you're very close to a source of gravity, it slows down again as well. So you have a black hole, you know, a black hole, and you try to go round the black hole. Whilst you're going round, for you it's maybe 10 minutes, for the rest of the universe is maybe, 100 years. So it's not perception. This is what I would like you to go out from here and take with you. That's not perception. Time is can be really slowed down. Okay. I go to the other part of it, the arrow of time. It appears that we are going from past to present to future all the time. It so appears to us. But when you think about it, you can't really find why it's like that. Why is it like that? Why I don't remember what I did, what I'm going to do next week? Why I remember always what I did yesterday or the day before? Why is it like that? And this is called asymmetry of time. So it's not symmetrical. Time is not symmetrical. It's like pointing towards a particular direction. And it is irreversible. That's why I took the egg. So maybe it's a little breakfast, I don't know, but from a normal egg, you break it, you can't unbreak the egg. You can't unbreak it. You never see a cup of coffee or tea unmix itself from milk and sugar. We don't see that. We see the reverse. Or a broken cup, for example, on the floor. We don't see it unbreak and go back. It's always in one direction. And this creates an issue because they couldn't find a reason why this is so. And reason lies in the second law of thermodynamics, of heat. Which says, basically, the implication is that entropy, chaos, disorder, increases in a system. It starts very smooth and ends not so. Maybe you will elaborate on this, I don't know, later. So you can make an omelette, but you can't make the omelette and, I mean, I never seen it done. it could be possible, and I never seen it, but let us say that you can't reconstitute the egg itself. You can't do that. And that is why the arrow of time is pointing towards the future. Because it's pointing towards more chaos, more disorder, more entropy. Then there are those who think, so this is, we already gone through this, who think that time is only an illusion, it's a perception of something. And it is just the consciousness which is creating this illusion of time. And that in fact is an emergent experience because we are at this point of evolution of the universe and it will change one day. So Professor Smolin, an American professor, a physicist, says the laws of physics suggest the flow of time is just a convenient illusion that can be replaced by computation. In other words, time is just a trick that makes the equations spit out the right answers. So, in this direction. But see. Then there is Julian Barber, who insists that the universe is really a vast static area of nows. He's a presentist. He says that now exists, but nothing else exists. Past does not exist, future does not exist, it's always now. And it's like a succession of frames in a movie. When you have a DVD or a movie or whatever, that something that records, you can go backwards and forwards, and he thinks, Julian Barber thinks, this is exactly what happens in the universe. It's the instant that I'm saying this is already past, does not exist, and the moment I utter it is actually the present, and that exists. It's like a movie reel. Okay. So it's very fascinating, but I don't agree with this view, because as I mentioned before, it doesn't explain how speed, velocity, and gravity affect time. It wouldn't affect it. If it's just now, it wouldn't affect it. If it's just already there or the real, it wouldn't affect it. How come it ticks faster here than there, as we said? And of course, relativity, although it says that the direction of time can be reversed in reality, is not in agreement completely with this view. He mentions relativity, so Julian Barber mentions relativity as his point of departure for his consideration. And it starts making sense. I won't go into the details. But I think that relativity really is useful to say, to give coordinates. So I tell you, listen, I'm going to Trier, which is, I don't know, so many meters to the north. I give coordinates in space. But then I tell you, listen, I'll meet you there at these coordinates at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So I gave you a coordinate of time as well. I think relativity is useful just to get this part clarified, not that it is continuously static, like Barber explains. Maybe this I'll explain a bit later, because I know it might be a little tricky. Okay. Now, philosophy came up with its own theories, based, most of them, on what we know from science, but some of them not. And we have presentism, that says only the present time, so like Barber, only the present time is real, nothing else exists, past, the dinosaurs don't exist. And, so I don't know, Trier in space does not exist in 100 years' time, you know. So both don't exist, just the present exists. Then there is the growing past, or growing block, universe, and it says that the past is real, because it happened. Only the future is not real. The past and the present are real. And the present is all the time. How can I represent it? For all the time, all the time here. The present is all the time here. Then this is growing, it's adding on to it. It's adding on to it all the time. And the present is always here on the edge. That's why it's called growing edge. Okay? Which is. They're all making sense, of course, when you see them like that. And then there is eternalism, which says that past, present, and future are all real, equally. So they exist. And what eternalism says, and it's matching the best with relativity, I have to say, so as a theory, it's matching the best with relativity. What it is really saying is that when you have time coordinates, it's saying, as a metaphor, the same like it's over there, not over here, but in time. It gives a physical flavor to time. So keep those in mind. Okay, now I'll try to give you some of my ideas, but I don't know whether I'll manage. And then there is, I forgot to mention this. There's a possibility, the Russians are a bit advanced in this, and it's very, very conjectural, that there are more dimensions of time, not just the one we know of. And that would open up, and very difficult to prove, but that would open up a whole new can of worms, because what does it mean? Does it mean that you can actually walk a mountain of time and go down a valley of time as if you were in space? And what does that even mean? You know, how can you move in a different dimension of time? Is it going backwards? Is it going round? What does it mean? Is it a repetitive action? That something when there's more than one dimension of time, something happens and happens again? For example, at the same time, you're caught in a loop? Is it that?
The Russians are working on. There are some. It's very 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 nearly. It's not sci-fi, but it's very very at the edge of studying this stuff. So, but I had to mention it because it's interesting. And given string theory gives us 10 or 11 dimensions in space. Is it so strange to have it also in time? It's not that strange. I mean, 11 dimensions, it's cool even to think about it, that there could be dimensions which are shrunk up here with us, and we can't have access to them because they are so tiny. They are the Planck scale. They're so tiny. And why is it so strange then to have maybe more dimensions at the Planck times, so the small, tiny units of time. Some suggested, for example, that time is, as I said, also carried by a particle, by a chronon. So what applies for the physical part, for space, would apply also for time. before I come to this, so for the question that I put at the beginning, when did time start? Was time born with this universe? I believe that we might be living in an ongoing cycle, as I said, of big crunches. I think you do a big bounce. For the very short period of time where the singularity occurs, time stops. It doesn't make sense. In the heart of a black hole, for example, or a singularity like this, time doesn't even make sense. Everything collapses. Time does not have, an arrow doesn't exist at all, because reality collapses there. So it can't be so fundamental if it collapses, if it stops. In hyperspace, we said, in the bulk, time has no meaning. In the multiverse, around the multiverse, it doesn't pass, or it passes at different rates. So it can't be so fundamental. We know its existence only when there is a normal reality, a macro reality. At the quantum level, we don't know if time passes. I just mentioned Planck scale, but in the end we don't know at the Planck scale if there is a Planck time. Planck scale is the shortest distance you can have, if you know. So is it so fundamental? Probably not. The only thing that militates against this big bounce thing is that the universe is expanding so quickly that it will be probably end in a big freeze, not a recollapse together, but no one really knows.
So, second question is this time ingrained in the fabric of reality, pre-Big Bang? Well, I just answered that question. Probably, before the Big Bang, there was something which had time in it as well. But we don't know. We really don't know. I mean, when I say we, not me, the scientists, they are not sure about this because we don't know what happened before the Big Bang. We're not sure. And I already mentioned that probably time is emergent from more some fundamental stuff because in hyperspace at that quantum level probably doesn't really pass until the singularity. In what direction time is going, I hope I have answered that as well. I think that the test is the thermodynamic arrow of time. So always keep it in mind, from low chaos to high chaos, low entropy to high entropy. So things get more messier as we go along, and that's why we know we're going forwards in time. But I have a conjecture to propose to you, which is a bit more than a conjecture, just one, and you'll be basically finished then, that time might be more complicated than we think. It might actually, at the quantum level, split into other realities. So at every quantum Planck scale of time, it splits. So imagine this. I got from my kids as well. I got a lot of ideas. this is used to put balloons and fill them with water, and then you basically throw them to someone else and this made me think that actually the passage of time, the line, the timeline, right? At every Planck time, every Planck instant, so to say, splits into different realities. So you can have all things that you could have done, they are done in some other reality. Okay? Some science fiction, but it was Hugh Everett in the 1950s that came up with this interpretation, competing with the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics. And he got this many words interpretation. And why I'm mentioning this, because I really think that this whole concept of time and reality that we live in is much more complicated than we actually see. It can't be so easy and straightforward. One thing that some scientists are now saying, I read a paper which is very interesting, that it may be, it's not really branching, you see, this is the many words, so you see, yeah, you have, I got a laser pointer and I didn't use it even once. You see, this is my reality now, and it splits already. This, I could do this and that, and then that reality splits again, it carries on. So you have a different type of reality. You can call it a multiverse as well, but in a different way, because it's every multiverse would have this infinite branching out of reality. But I read a paper, I was saying, that maybe this branching out is more than branching out, it's a twisting like a rope and going, as for example, with this toy, and only branching out in mind, but when you turn, maybe time is like this, maybe reality is like this. Maybe it's not really branching out, it's all there already. And it's just so convoluted, so twisted, so warped, that we don't realize that there is another reality. Because it's somehow all going in the same direction. This paper was very, very interesting. Of course, it's all then, all these theories have all the mathematics behind them, right? Which, of course, I don't understand, or I understand a little bit of it, but not at all, and not, it's not proper, probably true. It was not my goal to portray this. So that is what I had to say. The only thing that I wanted to add
is as I said as well, yeah, so my final thing is that about this many worlds interpretation, it's also called that alternate histories. So you could actually this morning woke up and had, I don't know, beans and sausages, so to say, but in another reality you could have had, I don't know, a vegetarian meal, you know, small differences, or in another one fruits, or another, you know, all that could have happened would have actually happened, but not here, not in this reality, in a different reality. And this has an impact, an enormous impact on how time is perceived, on the whole concept of space as well, but especially of time, of reality, of how complex time is, of how it actually progresses, you know? So I leave you at that. Of course, all this goes down the drain, if I may, if we are living in a simulation, in a very advanced simulation, and we're not really here, but some 15-year-old is playing Sims with us. And all this is not real, because it's just a very advanced simulation. Yeah, you think maybe that this I'm making, trying to make a joke, but in reality it's not a joke, it's a proper philosophical theory. And some physicists are interested in trying to disprove it, more than prove it. But this might be a topic for some other philosophical event, maybe one day. Are we really in the matrix, or are we not? So I hope I've confused you enough, and thank you so much for being so patient with me. I have some handouts. So I'm open to questions. I lost the ball.
How the universe dropped.
Have you got questions around?
How long that took? Yes, Bob?
Just a point of clarification. Is the multi-worlds theory that you mentioned here at the end, is it that every single possible event that could have occurred maybe once this morning did occur?
So the distinction, I know that might sound a bit unclear what I said, but the multiverse, the first multiverse I mentioned is a multiverse which arises from the wrong string theory. So in reality, those universes in the multiverse would then possibly, if they have the same laws of physics as we have, they would have also the concept of many worlds. So in that universe, the alternate histories would be also infinitely branching out. So one multiverse is, how shall I put it, contained. One universe is contained, right? But in it, there would be these alternate many worlds interpretation. So they are two different or distinct concepts. The landscape theory, so string landscape theory, proposes 10 to the 500 different types of universe. Not infinite. Whilst the branching out in the many worlds interpretation of reality within every single universe in the multiverse, infinite in reality, because all possibilities, everything, different jacket color, different, you know, everything, you know, different at every quantum leap, so to say, at every quantum time, so very, very small period of time, at every that instant branches out, oh, and that branches out and creates an ongoing cycle of branching out of realities in order to cater for all the possibilities. I think all possibilities are
infinite possibilities.
There was another parallel universe in which I, having lived exactly the same life as I've lived up to the present, I'm going around with a meat cleaver killing everybody.
Yeah, it could be, yes. I sometimes think about that. If I in another universe, I'm a killer, serial killer.
You're exactly the same person up to that point, and then suddenly become a serial killer.
Yeah, this is debatable, because the Everett's conception is related to a quantum event. But the mother of all quantum events was the singularity that gave rise to our universe. From that moment forward, one can presume or conjecture that from that moment forward, there's this splitting of reality or the time. And once you give birth to a universe which is not in the multiverse, a universe which is a different reality, let's call it different reality, not a different universe, okay? Once you give rise to this splitting up of different realities, then that how should I put it? It branches out, it carries on. So I don't know whether you're familiar with Schrödinger's cat, you know? So when there's Schrödinger made a thought experiment with the patients, of course, and says the cat, the probability that the cat is alive and dead because of poison, it's 50%, right? And cats are either dead or alive, okay? But when we observe it, when we look at it, immediately we change something in the reality. And the cat is either dead or alive. It can't be both. Through watching it. However, it said, the fact that the cat is interacting with the universe in the box, with air particles, for example, is already creating an interaction, an entanglement to the not a entanglement of particles. It's already creating an entanglement with our universe. So the quantum universe is already being affected and affecting. So there and then, another reality. So the cat is alive when I open the box, but then in the other reality. And half asleep in another one, and maimed in another, you know? So all the possibilities, you know? But the multiverse I mentioned before is a physical, so to say, multiverse. Huh? That's why I represented it with walls. Whilst every single one of these, then, if it has the same rules of quantum mechanics and physics, would then branch out in all these realities, you know? So every one single one of them. So it's a different multiverse. Multiverse exists at, we don't know, maybe it's eternal. And this would put our universe not so unique after all. We think it's unique, but it is I know it is mind blowing and counterintuitive, but at the moment those are the theories we were working with. They're quite cool actually. I like them very much, because all the science fiction I watched when I was young is not all untrue. It's based on some conceptions. I don't know whether I answered your question.
Andrew's question.
Just to say thank you for very good summary of where we are. And I was just going to add something about your reference to inflation and entropy and so on. And you already said actually quite a lot. One thing is that of course without time we haven't actually got the universe at all, because nothing happens, you know, that's it. And the other thing that happens, we go through time, that I wanted to mention, is that it's not just chaos that increases, it's what you've got is new possibilities opening up. And so, for example, as you go along, I mean, you start off when you begin to get fundamental particles. Without fundamental particles, you can't have atoms. Without atoms, you can't have things like planets and so on. Without planets, you can't have life. Without life, you can't have biology, and then you can't have us. And all the time, possibilities are increasing. You know, and that, as you say, this links to the ideas of the multiverse and the tax of possibilities that didn't happen and so on.
It just seems to be a sort of very.
So, and you think that, Andrew, you think that time is fundamental?
The idea of the separate interpretation is that we're creating an infinite number of multiverses all the time. That would mean that, for example, when this meeting was planned, we planned the meeting, since then there's been an infinite number of multiverses created with all different possibilities. And yet we end up here, as we planned it, several meters in advance. The probability of that actually being the case has been actually small.
Okay. So, the multiverse, this is the same, but in a different fashion. But Bob asked the same question, and it's very, very, I know it's contradictory. So, what I'm saying is, take this then, this is just jumbo, what we call jumbo in Maltese. So, the multiverse is all the time popping up. In hyperspace, it's black. Okay. So there are 10^500 different types. I think it could be more, it could be less. They're all popping up, all at the same time. They could be different universes, to be honest. So in some of them, life is not possible. Because they are different, different universes, completely different, physical universes. What I'm saying is that if this is our universe, then it could work also in another universe. Every instant, every plunk, time instant, let's call it, reality is split into all possible probabilities or possible realities. So if we plan this meeting and we made it here, it is because in this reality we have done it. In some reality I was ill with sinusitis and I couldn't make it. In another reality these people would have been crawling to me. For example, In another reality, I don't know, as you were wearing red, not green, and you do this, you would be wearing green, not red. So all possibilities, it's not that we can perceive this. It's like the guy who opens the box and found the cat alive, doesn't think that the cat is dead in the other reality, in the other. So the misnomer I used before is that I used universe. That's why I confused the audience. But in reality, it's not universe, it's reality. A different reality. So it's called, in fact, Everett is more confusing because he says many worlds interpretation. And it's to counter the Copenhagen, which says, listen, the cat is, because we looked at it, it's either dead or alive. Look, that's all. But in reality, whatever it is, I just repeated. Whatever it wanted to say is that the cat is already interacting with our world. So there is already a quantum event. So there is already a splitting up of reality. Not to use world, not to use universe. I don't know whether I answered you.
It seems to imply that there must be an infinite number of universes in which this meeting didn't take place.
Or it did in a different way, or slightly different.
It didn't take place.
Yes, of course.
It just so happens that we are in this universe, yes. We have a specific memory of all these.
I don't call it universe, I call it reality. Because the universe would imply that it's one of these. Whilst I am implying that it's one of these lines. The other reality is this, and my reality is this. But they are all coming from. It's coming all from this universe, you know. But it's splitting up in so many realities.
That's my fault because I used the universe at the beginning.
We have time for just one more question.
Hi, Anna. Thanks for the presentation. It's great. It was interesting when you were talking about the membranes and hydrophobics, and you mentioned that a particle could move from our reality as we see it into hyperspace and then come back at an earlier time. So from our perspective, it would be retrocausation where effect would precede cause, or it would be acausal completely. We just wouldn't have a cause.
Yes, you put it better than me.
Do we ever see, has science ever seen that, or is there any evidence to support that?
There's kids' experiments. There's an experiment which it doesn't probably prove it, but it goes into that direction, because it should be, you know, that when there's light should be particles, but it behaves sometimes like a wave. Mm. This is still in history, in reality. One of the reasons why it does this is because, and this is a conjecture now, because of this, because the electron, the photon, perhaps is in all places where it should be at the same time, or else it just goes out of hyperspace and goes traveling, and it lands on the screen where it should. That is the only experiment I know of. I don't know that double slit experiment, and it has been proven and proven and reproven. They tried everything, and now they have interferometers to test as well the tiny fluctuations and these things. But to see direct evidence of this, I think we don't have the one day maybe. It's a conjecture, and it works well mathematically as a conjecture apparently, and I don't know, I wouldn't even try, but it does, and then this whole thing then creates an issue with time as well, because then time is really reversible. I mean, time, you don't really need to go forward, you can go sideways, like this. And don't forget that according to Heisenberg, if I'm not mistaken, Sean can correct me, the electron, for example, does not really exist in a particular spot. It is in a cloud of probabilities, and we can't really pinpoint it. We pinpoint it when we look at it. So again, the Schrödinger's problem issue. Mm. So it's like a whole cloud of probabilities, and then we look at it and boop, it's there. And it's a bit strange, isn't it? So it's a bit counterintuitive what happens at the quantum level. And one of the issues could be, one of the results, the reasons, sorry, could be that it just pops. It doesn't really pop out of nothing. It's just staying somewhere else and comes there through for some reason. Another, if I may ask, add just this. Why is gravity so weak? It takes the whole planet to keep my feet to the ground. Okay, so as we said, it's a warping of things, but it takes. And then, distance. And then, to overcome it, a tiny little magnet. It's not so strong, but a magnet can overcome the whole planet. I can jump, I've overcome the whole planet. Why is it so weak? And some say because the still to be found graviton, which is the particle probably carrying gravity, this warping, then, is so tiny that it slips out of our reality, goes into hyperspace, and like spills over into hyperspace, for example. And that is why it's so weak, because it's so small and so undetectable. But these are conjectures all coming from string theory, from string theory, from this one-dimensional, which is very difficult to prove as well. Probably they will never prove it. And well, even the membrane thing, which we are attached to membrane, I'm a little bit of a fan of string theory, so I have to, I like to go in that direction. The fact that we are attached to a membrane, it's as well coming from string theory. Yeah.
So can we thank you?